Hi, friends. I'm Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, where I chat with friends each week about how they've moved from just plain old struggling to struggling well. The show is not only about motherhood and kids, though. The fact of the matter is, we all have struggles. So think of it more as a conversation regarding how to be less bad at our jobs. I don't know about you, but I can use all the help I can get. So let's go ahead and get started. Hey, and welcome back. This is episode 53, and I'm talking to a girl named Lori who I actually didn't want to talk to about a topic that I really didn't want to discuss. It's funny though, you guys, when I was editing, I could hear how nervous I was in my voice just to talk about this topic of same-sex attraction. This show, you guys, it is a freaking labor of love. If I didn't care about you guys so much, I would never repeatedly put myself in stressful situations. You guys heard that race conversation. Very much a lot of sweating there. So there was a lot of sweating in this one as well. I was actually talking to a friend of mine at coffee this week, and she said, I'm glad you have a show and everything, but I really don't like mom podcasts. And I said, you know, it's so funny. I really didn't want to have a mom podcast. I wanted to have a podcast, but not necessarily to moms. And God said, nope, you're going to do into moms. And so once I stopped fighting him about it, I went ahead and did a podcast for moms. And so today I'm talking to a girl who her story is that she has liked girls for her whole life. And now she speaks to churches about it. And I promise you, she did not want that to be her story, but it is. And so I just find it interesting that she obediently is talking about something she doesn't want to talk about on my show that I obediently have, even though I really didn't want to have it. So funny the way God works. I would encourage you to go ahead and listen to this with an open mind, even if you feel like you're pretty sure you're not going to agree with something that's said. Like I said, I really didn't even want to have this conversation, but I'm very glad that I did. Before we get started, though, I wanted to thank a couple people who have left reviews, and I wanted to try to guilt the rest of you into leaving one if you haven't yet. So here goes for the guilt. If you haven't left a review yet, but you've enjoyed the show, how dare you? How dare you? Okay, that's all I've got for that. And then these are the ones I wanted to thank. Mama with a nickname, she says, I don't typically write reviews, but I'm obsessed with this podcast. I recently found it and have been listening to the past episodes one after another. I love it. I can really relate to the host's humor, and I always laugh at her comments in the podcast intro and closing. So funny. I have a lot of feedback on the intros and the closings, and I'm glad you like them. They're super fun to make. And then Mommy K said, I laugh and cry through many of the episodes, but I always know I'll come away with an encouraged heart, ready to take on what God has for me that week. Yay. That's so good. So, so good. All right, y'all. Buckle up. Let's have a stressful conversation with Lori. Hi, Lori. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am doing well, considering I had a baby a week and a half ago.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. Heaven's sakes. Is it a girl or a boy?
It's our second daughter. And so I actually think I got like a few hours of sleep strung together last night. So I'm feeling great.
Wow, you're really winning at this so far.
Seriously.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome. Will you introduce yourself?
Yeah. My name is Lori Krieg. And like I said, I just had our second daughter. I'm married to Matt Krieg. We've been married for, we're working on our eighth year here. And we have a almost two-year-old, Gwen, and then a week and a half-year-old named Juliet.
Lovely names.
Thanks. They're super sweet girls.
Where do you live?
I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I've traveled a lot. I've moved a lot, but I'm hoping to stay here for a while.
Okay. So today we're talking about something I don't want to talk about. I've told you that. We're talking about same-sex attraction. And let me just, I wanted to tell you the backstory of how this all happened. I got an email from somebody that I didn't know saying, you might want to think about talking to this girl, Lori. And I looked up your stuff and I thought, wow, I'm really going to have to pray about that. And what I meant by that was, I'm really just going to have to pray that God doesn't make me do this. And so then later I heard from you and you shared your heart with me and I just couldn't not share the story. And so I want to talk about this for two reasons. Well, first of all, I just want to say there's a lot of people who I love who are gay. Yeah. Friends and family. And so I don't want to talk about it. But I also feel compelled that the obedient thing to do is equip women in the church mm-hmm. who are struggling with this, who aren't going to talk about it because they feel so much shame, like the worst of the worst. Yeah. And I want you to speak to that because that's not true.
Yeah.
And I also want you to speak to the woman who is like me, who has a passel of other issues, but this isn't one of them. How do we love well? Because the church historically has not done a super job.
Yeah.
So what do we do? And I just also want to say, as much as I feel brave for having you on, you are so brave for, I mean, this is your story that I feel like you've got to not want this to be your story. I mean, I feel like if you were Jonah, you'd be in a fish right now. Like, not going to deal with this, not going to talk about this. But you're on the wrong side of this conversation. And you're talking to people in the church who don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, way to go for being brave. And I am so excited / scared.
Thank you. And thank you for your honesty, too. And even just talking with a friend yesterday, you know, I just was talking about how I am so vocal about this. And yet I still can feel scared and can still wrestle with shame. And what I love about it in my best moments is, like Paul, that this just keeps me so tethered to the Lord. Mm. And it keeps me so humble. And so for that, I am grateful. In that, I will continue to speak, and it makes me brave. It's not anything inside of me apart from the Spirit and me just grabbing onto Jesus' hand and just being like, okay, God, okay, Abba, let me follow you and let me walk into a place that can be scary and full of shame, but I keep my eyes on you, Jesus. So I think the best way to answer both pieces of that question of you know, just to reach out to women who are wrestling with this and to those who don't quite understand is to share some of my story.
Please.
Yeah, it begins, I say, our ministry is called Hole in My Heart Ministries. And I always say that, you know, I was born with two holes in my heart, and one of them was a heart murmur, and that healed up with time. That was fine. It didn't affect me. But the second one is one that we are all born with, and it is this craving for God. And inside of there are good, beautiful, what Matt and I call our core needs, like for purpose and worth and a sense of belonging and nurture and safety. Like that, we believe, are these good core needs that God has placed in us. Yeah. And when we're born, we look to our parents kind of as like surrogate God in a way. Just bear with me a second. Like we look to them to be like,
oh, no,
hey,
I get it.
Yeah, like, show me who God is, mom and dad, because you're the representation of God that I can understand as
you meet
a little
all my
baby.
Needs. You,
yeah, exactly. But we have imperfect parents. I'm an imperfect parent, you know?
Yes.
Like, and so that hole in our heart that's supposed to be like perfectly met, like our parents lift us up toward God, is not ever perfectly met. It can be met in great ways, but not perfectly. And then our siblings support that. Our friends support that. The world. But as we know, if we've been in this world for more than 5 minutes, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And so here I was, and I was born to a pretty, I say normal family, not really. I have 8 older siblings and 3 younger. So there are 12 of us kids born to my same mom and dad. And I really did enjoy it. It was really fun. It was kind of like, if you've seen Cheaper by the Dozen, it's like that, except not like kids like swinging from the chandeliers very much.
Okay.
A little less crazy than that. And really fun. Even to this day, I am constantly texting with my 6 other sisters. Like there's always a group text going on, and with my mom. And
I love
it's really sweet. It's really, really sweet. But my siblings, when I looked at myself, I was like the quiet kid in the corner, like who liked to read Nancy Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like to be, like I say, in the chaos, but not of the chaos. Like I wasn't the one that was up in front. I didn't feel like I was very special compared to my siblings. And it was nothing that they said. It was nothing that my parents said. It just, when I looked at them who were like valedictorian and record breakers and like beautiful and smart and funny, I just looked at myself and I was like, what do I like? Well, I like to wander in the fields, like find animals and like read books. And so I felt really kind of other, even in my, with my siblings. And from a young age too, I cannot say I was attracted to women, because when you're 5, you're not really like attracted to anyone. You're 5. And so but I could say that there was more of an interest in girls than there was in boys. My brothers, boys were my brothers, like my dirty, stinky, smelly. I would scrap with them and punch them and they'd hit me back. Like they were just my brothers. They weren't very intriguing, but girls were.
Okay.
And so this is like the piece of the story where you're like, okay, so were you born that way with this attraction toward women? And I just have to say, like, I really don't care.
Okay.
Maybe not. And like scripture doesn't it can affirm this in the sense that Romans 8 says like that all creation is groaning in the pangs of childbirth. And so when sin entered this world, it affected everything. Mm-hmm. And so that includes like the weeds in our garden, the wasps in my daughter's sandbox that are driving me crazy. And it could be our genes. You know, geneticists have found like links to different sin issues. And I, you know, if by the end times, like they find links to a bunch of different sins, I'm not a slave to my genes. I am, I'm a child of God. Like he can set me free from anything, even if there is a genetic tie, even if I do still have that tendency, or if I do still have that weakness, if you will, like God is my strength in that. So there were a couple of instances that happened growing up that kind of spoke into those core needs, but spoke into them in a wrong way. I was molested by a ballet teacher and by a stranger in a store at ages 8 and 11.
Wow. I'm sorry.
Gosh. Yeah, thanks. And played a game with like some family friends that wasn't really a game. And these things spoke to those core needs and like said, yeah, you have value, you have worth, but it's not for who you are. It's what you do and what you look like. And it really like made me afraid to be who I was. And I just kind of like put all these masks over this broken heart and all these barriers. And I went on the offensive through junior high and high school. I really, if I could get guys to notice me, I would be in charge. So here I am. I am in control. If your eyes are on me, I know where you're at.
Yeah. I have heard that is really common.
Right.
You know, result of that.
Yeah. Of abuse. Totally. And so I didn't really let them touch me, but I did keep them in my vicinity. And with like girlfriends, they were just friends who were girls, but I did just, there was just some lines crossed every once in a while that just wasn't healthy. Okay. But, and as a senior in high school, and I'd have to say my family is like, I was born and raised in a Christian family. They were all Christians. I like came to Christ at Bible club when I was 6, but it became real to me when I was a senior in high school and I went on a backpacking trip and we had some solo time alone. And I just was like sitting there and all of a sudden I was overcome with this sense of grief over my own sin, 17-year-old in the woods. And I just started crying. Oh. And I just sense like God just saying, like, just, you know, like open up your Bible. So I like flip open to Luke 2 randomly and I read Mary's prayer and she says, oh, how I praise the Lord, how I rejoice in God, my Savior, for he takes notice of his lowly servant girl. Mm. And that desire, that core longing that I have for like to be seen and seen as unique and have worth, like was so like, like take your breath away. You know, those moments when like connecting with God and you're like, ah, like he satisfies. It was one of those beautiful moments. Mm. And so I received that and I cried, but instead of like, you know, going to counseling and like dealing with my stuff, I just kind of like painted over all the outsides. And instead of being like flirtatious, like popular girl, I became youth group girl, which is, there's nothing against youth group. Youth group's great. But I just really did a lot of good things for Jesus. And or so I thought, like, and it felt good. And you get good accolades from parents and whatever. But then my insides and my outsides started breaking apart. And I started getting a lot of panic attacks in college. And
at this point, would you identify yourself as a lesbian or both?
No,
or?
It was just at this, it just was the intrigue. I was a Christian girl. So I knew in my Christian world that that was not okay.
Okay.
And so I did not engage in it. I just felt the intrigue every once in a while.
Like what was your, did you have shame because you felt that? Like what happened when you felt intrigued? Did you just push it aside because it wasn't?
That's a good question. I would think about it for a minute and then I'd be like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's in my mind. And again, I don't think it's the worst sin, but then I did. That's the worst sin. Yeah. No, no, no.
Well, because that's what the church tells us. So that would be why you thought that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I knew what was, you know, right and wrong in my culture. And so I judged other people hard. Core. Mm-hmm. And yet I had this inside of me.
Okay.
And so body starts falling apart. I decide a good solution would be to go study abroad at Oxford. So I did that.
Okay. That sounds at least fun.
You know, they say wherever you go, there you are. So there I was. And I took my cute little depressed self with me there. Mm. And I just walked the streets of Oxford, like digging my nails in my hands, just saying over and over, I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself. And it wasn't, was it because of like the same-sex attraction aspect? It was just, I felt worthless. I just felt like I couldn't do anything right because I couldn't get great straight A's in Oxford. I didn't feel like I was achieving good enough. It was like my world I had set up, these facades I had put together were just crumbling before me, and I didn't know how to duct tape myself back together. Mm. So I get home and I just decide two things. I decide, okay, yeah, I get it. I need God. Okay, get it. Yeah. Over and out. Second thing is I felt like I needed one tangible human person to see me and like to be my friend. Yeah. And so when I met Heather, she was a Christian. I met her online and it just was a quick friendship, but we were broken in similar areas and it escalated from friendship to really quite codependent to sexualized. And at this time, my dad was a pastor. Like our family was on like focus on the family. We were that family. Okay. And in at least this area. And so here I was, number 9 of the 12 who are supposed to be good kids. Yeah. And I'm doing the worst thing. Mm. And I just would go to church and my tears streaming down my face because I was still leading worship. Like I was still doing things. I'm like trying to. And I'd hear these sermons and it felt like every single one was on idolatry. I'm like, okay, I get it. And I just be like, Jesus, cut it out of me. Then make me, how can I stop this? Like, I didn't know how. Yeah. And so I did go to my pastor father at that time and I told him.
Okay.
And to his credit, he didn't, you know, wig out and like throw me in therapy and things like that. But he prayed with me and he saw it for sure as like mostly a spiritual issue. And he too, and really like my dear sweet dad, who I respect so much, he didn't really know. And I honestly wasn't extremely honest with him. So.
Okay. So you told him part.
I did. Okay. And so I prayed with him and I was like, yeah, we're going to totally like knock the devil in the teeth. It's going to be gone. But that like lasted for like maybe a half hour. Okay. And then I felt everything again. And then I just started lying a lot.
Okay.
Because
you tried the truth and that didn't work.
I tried.
Basically. Yeah.
And it didn't work. And so I didn't know what to do. I spent the next year, you know, trying to make this work, trying to make it just friendship without this sexual aspect. And I didn't know how. And so it was tumultuous. And yet there were some good aspects to it. Like, I can't just say like all these relationships are horrible because they're not.
I think that's such a good point. I mean, because you hear the church say, you know, leave that lifestyle and be happy. And they're like, we're happy.
Right. And really, because some of those core needs were being met. Yeah. And like, and it was just like, and we tried to keep our eyes on Jesus. Like, she was a Christian. I was a Christian. Like, it wasn't like I was doing crack and doing this. Like, it was, I was going to church, going to my Christian university. And this was a piece of me that I didn't know how to not do.
Yeah.
I would desperately, like, I would go to Christian bookstores. I would look online and I didn't know anyone like me. Mm. Because I would read these testimonies about non-Christians coming to Christ and then like breaking free from this. And now I know that there are more believers out there like me, but I didn't know. I was like, how do I become more Christian? Mm. I didn't get it.
Okay.
And so I ended up in that season, like I was really depressed because I just felt so torn. And I like saw a counselor who was helpful and like told a couple people, but there's so much shame. There's so much incredible shame. And there was a season in that time when I remember like just looking at my phone and I just asked God, I said, Jesus, would you please have someone call me? Someone who's like ahead on the journey, farther along on the journey than me, who would just call me and tell me like, there's hope for you, Lori. Like, you can make it. And nobody did.
Okay, I'm like, who called?
Who did it? Nobody did. But I, in that moment, I was like, if I ever make it through, I want to be that person for other people. Like, I want to be one voice to be able to be like, hey, no, I have not arrived. Mm-hmm. You'll hear that as I get through my story. But I just want to say, like, just keep going. Like, you can do it. Like, God wants to meet those needs. So here I am in this relationship that's both good and don't know how to not do it. And so
let me ask you, what are those conversations like with Heather? You're like, we're girlfriends. We shouldn't be, but we are. But we love the, like, what does that look like around the dinner table?
Yeah, it was really hidden. There really weren't many dinner table conversations. It was just all very hidden. Because even like our closest friends who were Christians, didn't know. It was kind of like after it all ended, everyone just kind of did a, oh yeah, that makes sense. So that's okay. What's going on.
So, but with her, you didn't have honest conversations about it.
We did. We both were like, I don't know.
Okay.
What was interesting, and I wonder if anyone listening will be able to relate to this, if this is some of their story, was that like, because we were both Christians and wrestling with this, and it was so secret and so like against everything around us, mm-hmm. it almost bonded us closer together.
Mm, like you guys against the world kind of thing.
Yep.
Okay.
And so had we been able to share it more openly, and I recognize now there were safe people with whom we could have shared, I feel like it almost would have helped to make it not so intense, but almost the like black and white nature that you were talking about, that's like in the church of just like, well, it's all bad and it's terrible and it's horrible. Like instead of like coming alongside and being like, hey, what's going on? Like, how can I like journey with you with this? Instead of that approach, I think that would have been way more helpful.
Okay. Now tell me about you realized there were safe people. You didn't go to them.
Yeah.
Did you at any point on any level realize at the time and choose not to go? Like, how do you know now that they were safe and you didn't before?
Because I've told them my story now and they've just cried because they were like, Lori, you could have trusted me. Like, they're just so sad that they didn't feel like I could have trusted them.
Okay.
And so I'm like, oh, oops.
Okay. Whoopsie daisy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in that season is when I met Matt, and I met him because I was writing for our school newspaper, Cornerstone University, is a Christian university here in Grand Rapids. And I wrote a column called Get Out, which is like encouraging people to get out and get off campus. And I realized I hadn't asked any guys to go with me because they scared me and I didn't like them.
Okay.
So I was like, who do I know that's not creepy? Uh-huh. I was like, Matt Krieg. He's not creepy. And I hardly knew him, but I like invited him and then another girlfriend to come with us. And I just realized, I was like, whoa, not only is he not creepy, he's like kind of funny. And like, maybe I could be like his friend. So at this moment, you know, people are usually like, okay, maybe she's just bisexual. Maybe she likes guys and girls. It wasn't like this sexual animal attraction to Matt. It was like this intangible heart trust. Mm. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
And it was only with him.
Okay.
And so we just started talking, and it became clear that he wanted to date me. And I was like, whoa.
You don't hold the phone. Understand.
Yeah, you don't know. You didn't know what's going on behind the scenes here, do you? And so in that time, I just realized I needed to end things with Heather for good. Like, I didn't know how it was going to work out, but we couldn't maintain even just a platonic like friendship.
Yeah. Was it because you were thinking you wanted to date Matt, or because you just...
No, I just couldn't do it.
Okay. Too much.
No. And so I ended things with her, and I was like, okay, well, Matt, I'm going to tell you all my stuff that was pretty much last week. And so I tell him, and I was like, so I struggle with. And so, do you still want to date me?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I don't see you any differently. He's like, I don't.
Okay.
You're the same person. And I was like, okay. All right. And so it was not like a going from dating a girl to dating a boy, like switch. It was like ended things with Heather, started this relationship, friendship. I told Matt I wouldn't kiss him till our wedding day, which I also said, BT dubs, I never want to get married. So good luck with that. So, wow, I put so many barriers. I have no idea how God did this together. Mm. But it was basically the first several months were him just like letting me cry as I grieved this other relationship and just talking me through it and just telling me truth from God of just like how much he loves me. And in that time, I really just began to see how like it was just, again, a heart connection to Matt. And I just want to say, our story is not prescriptive. Like, I do not want to say that this is the answer at all for other people listening. This is just how God orchestrated our story. Mm-hmm. So just as an aside.
Yeah.
So months went on, just growing in, I will say, love of Matt, and because it was, and it was this, again, heart connection. And I remember I was in advanced grammar class in my senior year, and I pulled out my journal, and I like wrote down, I'm an English major, by the way, okay. So big English nerd. I wrote down, I said, I don't want to get married, but I want to marry Matt. Mm. And so in saying that, I'm like, I don't want to be a stereotypical, which whatever that is, married person that was in my mind, but I do want to be with him. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about it. We prayed prayed about it. And then we actually ended up, as we prayed, I just sensed God saying no. And I was like, okay. So we ended up breaking up. We were talking about marriage, and I just sensed God saying no.
Okay. To the relationship in general.
Yes.
Okay.
To the whole thing. It was so bizarre.
Were you like, and, for reals, God? Like, I'm yeah, really confused here.
For reals. I was like that. And Matt like had almost paid off the ring. Like, I just cried because I was like, oh my word, like, what is going on? But that ended up being a really good season for me. That summer after I graduated college, I was a news reporter for a newspaper. And it was like, once we broke up, it was like we had not dated, because all of the pain of Heather, all of the same-sex attractions flooded back.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, well, I don't know what that was with Matt, but I, 10 out of 10, every minute of every day, think that this is what's best for me, is that I need to be in a relationship with a woman. And I am so angry at the church. I'm angry at God for keeping me from who I am and what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay.
So there I was, feeling that and like ready to leave West Michigan, which is kind of there's a lot of churches here.
Okay.
It's kind of like a church bubble. And I was like, I'll go to Vegas. I'll go to New York. I'll be a professor. I'll go to California. I'll do something. Mm-hmm. And yet I still had this like lingering depression stuff. And one of my friends was like, maybe you should like talk to someone about that. I was like, all right, maybe. So I go and start seeing this counselor who is different than the other ones I had seen who were helpful. But I really just wanted her to say, okay, you're depressed, you're anxious, and you're gay. So I could just like go and WebMD myself and like be fine.
Okay.
But she didn't let me.
Okay.
And so, you know how I kept asking myself that question, how do I become more Christian?
Yeah.
Carolyn, in this counseling session, didn't teach me how to become more Christian, but she taught me how to experience God.
Okay.
And it was there where I was like, okay, like I would talk about these desires for women or for whatever it was. And she'd be like, let's bring that to Jesus. And I began to see that God is not just this angry judger in the sky who is ready to beat me, where I would beg him to just kill me or squash this homosexuality out of me.
Yeah.
But he is both lover, and he is mother and father and sister and brother. And he is the need meter of my heart. And she just kept telling me this. And I would go to the Lord. She taught me listening prayer as I'm like learning to hear from God. And it's less of a top down, like, this is what's right. You need to read Leviticus and blah, blah, blah. It was like experiencing his withness, his Emmanuel nature. And I was like, okay, well, I got nothing to lose. So here I go. So there was one night I remember in particular where I'd like pretty much eliminated all of my friends because I didn't know. It was too hard. And I was so depressed. And you don't really reach out to people when you're depressed.
No.
And I was thinking about the knives in my kitchen and the bathtub to my right. And I just was like, leaving town and just going and being who I was. And I look upward and I say, Jesus, you say that you are the need meter of my heart. And you say that you're the lover of my soul. And you had better show up. And so it was not like, you know, gee, here he was in bodily form with 1,000 angels kissing my face and telling me I'm beautiful. But it was like this slow falling in love with him, where I'm driving to my meetings and I just sense his like presence in the car with me, like just directing my gaze to like a rainbow above me, or like this, I love airplane lines, like how jets make those contrails. Yeah. It's just such like a sign of hope to me of like, there's somebody above you who's going somewhere happy, even if your feet are in junk. Like,
okay.
You could be happy above you. And so I just would see that, or like cheering me on as I was like learning how to run because I needed to run for the endorphins. Good grief. But his presence was with me, and I began to fall in love with him and seeing how he is, like I said, like how he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I long to gather you together like a mother hen gathering her chicks. And that like gathering me, that holding me was what I needed and craved and what I hoped for in Heather and in these fantasized relationships in my mind. But it was never enough in my mind or in real life. But with Jesus, there were these moments where it was so fulfilling, where it met that hole in my heart. And it isn't like he took it completely away, this desire for intimacy or this same-sex attraction. And like, did it deplete? Yeah, it did get like lessened from like a 10 out of 10 to like a 1 or 2. And yet I will say there are days, even now, even today, where it can go back up to that 10 out of 10.
Mm.
And I am now married with 2 children.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. Okay. So I've got a couple questions. So
the
listening prayer
Yeah.
for a woman who struggles with same-sex attraction, for a woman who struggles with heterosexual lust for a woman who is just a jerk when she's hungry. Like, it doesn't, it's all the same. We all need Jesus and we need to listen. So tell me about listening prayer and kind of what does that look like?
Yeah, totally. It's like this. This is how it was taught to me. And this is like when we work with clients and people now, it's really just like getting to a place in your mind and your heart where you feel safe. Like for me, I would like go back in my mind and heart. Like it's like visualizing because you know how Jesus is a rock star teacher. He understands that story and picture is where transformation happens. And if you look at the brain, this is just, my husband is a licensed counselor. Okay. And so he loves the brain. It's so fun to study. But like, this is why talk therapy doesn't work super great because it's a lot of words. And so this is why when people would tell me verses about homosexuality, it's a lot of words, which is left brain. Okay. And so I can duct tape verses to my brain. But if I sit with Jesus and visualize like that mother hen gathering her chicks, I see a picture, that's right brain.
Okay.
And the right brain is where trauma is stored in your right brain and in your body. And so when I go there with Jesus, when I go to a place where I feel safe and I invite him there and I like read his word, or I go to a place where I have felt even traumatized and I invite him there, like it changes things so much more than talking about it. Does that make sense?
Or like willing yourself to be better.
Yes, exactly. Which talk therapy can be super great, super effective. But I have just found for me, the visual of being with Jesus and then just listening and abiding with him is so, it changed me.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So someone thinks, that sounds super. How on earth do I get to a place where I, like, what are me and Jesus standing on a mountain? Or like walk a listener through how they could possibly get to a safe place with Jesus if A, that sounds super weird, or B, they maybe don't feel safe or don't think of themselves in like an imaginary, you know, good imagination person or whatever.
Totally, totally. So, and I understand that this can sound a little weird. And like, I didn't grow up with this sort of perspective, but I just was so desperate. I was like, whatever works. And this just really opened up the Bible and opened up prayer for me. So
Well, let me tell you, it has changed my life to have this kind of a prayer time. But I'm just trying to walk a person through who has never heard of
it. Totally. So how I do it, so even now, you know, middle of the night, feeding a baby, I can feel a little anxiety, you know, and I just even can just rest. So I just close my eyes and I just ask God to reveal a picture to me of just where I feel safe. And for me, it is a real place. And it's where, like when I was like 8, and that when I mentioned like how I used to like to wander the fields and like, and so I picture that field next to a pond and I just see myself however I want to see myself there, like curled up next to it, like holding my knees or whatever it is. And then I just invite like Jesus in my mind's eye, which I know he's with me anyway, but I just say, Jesus, will you come be with me here? And I just picture him. And sometimes when I'm, it's interesting because it really shows the status of my heart. I can see him like way on the other side of the pond and I'm like so mad at him. And I'm like, I just talk to him, you know,
yelling across the water.
Yeah, that's how we are. Or right with me. And I'll just say like, God, I just need you to hold me right now. And I just picture that, like just that holding in that, like, again, that Emmanuel nature of God is just with me. Okay. And I might just like ask like, Lord, is there anything like you want to show me? Or is there anything like that you want to say? And sometimes like I'll have like that still small voice in my heart, or I'll see something in my mind's eye, or I'll like have this like really insatiable urge to like look at Matthew 5 or look at Isaiah, whatever. And I go there and I'm like weeping because it's always right on or not. Or if it's not, then I just thank God like just for the time to be with him, which isn't that relationship.
You know? Yep.
Do I have to demand something from him all the time?
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, that's changed everything for me. So I'm glad you feel the same way.
Yeah. Okay, so you get married. I can't remember where we were in the story, but I wanted to stop you there.
Totally. Yep. Okay. So I, finding freedom in Jesus, and I sense God saying to me, Lori, I have someone for you. And that just like stressed me out hardcore. And so, okay. All right, is it the barista? Is it this guy? And I'm like, I don't want to do this. It's scary.
Yeah.
And one of like Matt's old friends like messaged me or called me randomly. And I like messaged Matt and I was like, hey, guess who I talked to? And I pushed send on Facebook. Facebook makes the world go round. And I pushed send and I go, oh crap, I still love him. And it was like God pushed pause on this relationship with Matt, had me deal with all the heart issue, like over these next months, like deal. And then it was like unfreeze that here is Matt again. And I was like, I was like, well, it's been like a bunch of months since I've talked to him. He could be dating someone. I don't know. And so I message him. We like talk. Ends up like he was going to see someone else. But then literally his house gets struck with lightning.
What?
Not kidding. He doesn't have enough money to go see this other person. Instead, he like goes and sees his family who are like, we love Lori. You guys need to be together. And so he comes back and he's like, I want to get back together with you. And if we do this, this is it. And so that was September 08. And then October, we were engaged. In February of the following year, we were married. And it's been an adventure.
Okay.
It's an adventure since then. Now, a good one.
Yes, I'm sure. So what's it like to be married with this as part of your story?
Yeah. And it's still, you know, it's still a part of my story. And I actually did this morning in my own quiet time, journal time, I did like a little like compare and contrast. Like what's the difference between me and like, it's, you know, a heterosexual wife and mom? Like what are the, what is more difficult for me? And then what's like the exact same?
Okay.
And, I don't know if you want to hear some of that, but really like I have just noticed I am really not that much different from other wives and moms and like other women who I talk to who struggle like I do and who are married and moms. The similarities are these, are that like all moms, I think, and wives and women can feel like compare to each other and feel like unequipped and less than.
Yes.
Not all of us are like obsessed with, you know, babies and kids, and not all of us are super, super feminine, no matter how we struggle.
Right.
Not all of us just want to like jump our husbands.
Like, right.
The second they walk in the door, you know? And so this is, there are some things that I am noticing that like, cause sometimes I can be like, oh, I feel so different. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, I'm not. Like, Lori, like don't put yourself in that box.
That's
a lie. Like, and yes, that's a lie. Exactly. But things that are really can be different and that are maybe more difficult are honestly like those mom groups and women groups.
Okay.
Where I don't feel safe all the time sharing how I struggle in smaller groups of women. I've had people email me just like how they're like, cause you know, other women think I'm going to be attracted to them and like want to get with them. And
right. Like you're looking for a girlfriend all the time.
Right. And it's like one of my good friends says, you're not that amazing. Like not everyone wants to like it, I'm not attracted to every woman, just like if you struggle with heterosexual lust, like you're not attracted to every man. And so that can be hard to feel freedom to be honest there, and it can isolate. And like it happened when I was in that relationship, it just keeps you quiet and the enemy just loves that silence, loves the darkness, and it is a great place to grow shame.
Now, you mentioned to me that this is a thing that people tell you, oh my gosh, this is my deal too.
Yes. And they create email accounts to email me. They come, they don't use real names. They like come to our, you know, office. We do counseling. Again, it's not like to change orientation or anything. It's just to like come alongside you and journey with the hope of having God heal that hole in your heart. But yeah, so people, there's so much shame. I got an email today from someone who just, she's like, I don't feel safe sharing this. It's often that we get these emails and messages and people just coming to us like in the dead of night, it seems like. And I grieve. And, you know, you ask the question like, Lori, what can we as women who don't understand this, like, how can we understand better? And I just have to ask you to ask the Lord for his eyes and heart. And mouth. But really, Jesus, will you give me your heart for people who struggle with same-sex attraction or are openly, you know, gay and lesbian or whatever they're wrestling with or openly are identifying as? And I will tell you, as I ask God that, I can't help but cry because I feel like this is such a missed people group in our church.
Absolutely.
And I, you know, and this isn't just because it's empathy, because it's my own story too, but it's for these women and these men who feel like the worst of the worst.
Yeah, it's not part of my story and it breaks my heart too. So yes.
Absolutely. And I just think that often we're not trying to be mean. I just think that we're ill-equipped.
Yeah.
And we don't understand the like story behind the story. And often we just see the flags and we see the, you know, the militant blah, blah, blah. And we're like, you're bad. Yeah. Or we don't, or we are like, I don't know. Are you bad? I don't know what to say.
yeah.
So ask the Lord for his heart and his eyes and recognize that they're running the LGBTQIA or whatever letter that they are
taking.
That's
a lot of letters. Yep.
There's a lot of letters. Yeah. That they each care about. Like they would die for those letters. Like, so how can we love that person and recognize, okay, they've got a hole in their heart just like I do. What are they really looking for? And talk into that, speak into that heart.
Yeah.
And so if we ask the Lord for his eyes, I feel like these women's groups and these couples groups and church could be such a place of healing for all of us.
Yeah, not just the people with the sins that are more socially acceptable.
Absolutely.
I feel very thankful to be a part of a church that doesn't shy away from the hard issues that everyone likes to not talk about. And my pastor said something that completely changed my perspective, but he said, so you struggle with homosexual lust. Mm-hmm. I struggle with heterosexual lust.
Yeah.
I would like to sleep with all of your wives.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to. But just the idea that we are all the same.
Yeah.
We all have things that we aren't going to do.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that we don't want to.
Right. And I'll just say, so I won't go through everything I wrote down, but one thing that I see as a benefit from being someone who has same-sex attractions, can still wrestle with things. And so I'm married to a man who knows this, and he's known it from day one. And, you know, Matt has had his own struggles with pornography, which we've written about like on our blog. And that was really hard for me when he was honest about that. But now, like, so I've talked about this. So if Matt is looking at a woman outside of me lustfully, and let's say I'm looking at the same woman lustfully.
Okay.
Which one is sinning more?
Neither one.
Right.
Yeah.
So Matt and I, like, so we might, and I'll just be honest with you, we might see someone who is like, it's a struggle for both of us. And then we both like look away and I go, weird marriage five. And we like do a high five. I was like,
weird marriage high five.
That's what we say.
That's so funny.
And it's just, but like, he isn't like judging me. He's just like, yep, okay, let's move right along. And I, if there is a consistent amount of that, like for him or for me, I've noticed it's usually a heart issue. It's not just a, you know, an eye issue or a lust issue. It's usually a, okay, Lori, what are you looking for? If it's like consistently, like I am at a 10 level or 8, 9, 10, what's going on? And Matt will ask me this, Lori, what do you need right now? Mm-hmm. And it's not a woman. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Like, such a good question.
Yes.
For all of us. Gosh.
Yes. I am so thankful for that. And he's, what do you need? And it's, you know, it's not a plate of brownies. It's not that accolade. Mm. It's not whatever we struggle with. It's, you know what? I am really just needing to feel that safety or that nurture. And that is, okay, where are you going to get it from, Lori? And Matt can help me lift me up to the Lord. Friends can help us lift us up to the Lord. But ultimately, it has to be the King who is the filler of our soul.
So good. So what about the girl who would basically rather die than tell anybody that she is attracted to women? What would you like to say to her?
Just that God sees you and he so loves you and treasures you. And like, as you are, with the amount of strength that you have, just lift up your head and your heart to him and just say, God, please help me. Will you please like just show me the next right step? And maybe that is, you know, telling one person who is trustworthy, and maybe that person turns out to not be trustworthy, but just don't give up. Because I've had those people who aren't, but don't give up. Don't let one person represent all of the body of Christ.
Mm, such a good point.
Don't give up.
Okay. Where can people find you? You got me crying over here. I need you to keep talking.
Okay. You can find us at H as in heart, I M as in Matthew, my husband, H as in heart, ministries.com. So H, hole in my heart, ministries.com. And so we blog quite frequently. I haven't been blogging. We've had some guest bloggers recently since, oh yes, I had a baby. And we just had a book come out that I co-authored with Claire DeGraff. It's like 60 pages. It's a discussion guide and it's for church leadership to try and help churches become safer places. And
so
it's
good.
Free. It's online. Just download it. And if you think it's worth something, forward it to your church leadership team.
Lori, thank you so much for sharing your heart bravely and with such grace. Yeah. I really enjoyed talking to you.
You too. You are welcome. It is, it's an honor.
All right. Well, you have a good rest of your day. I'm going to go do something not stressful because it's been stressful.
You've done awesome.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later. Okay.
Okay. Bye. Hey guys. Wow, that was really something, right? I really hope her sharing your heart helped you see something in a different way than you had before. I love her comparison of ways that we're all pretty similar. I think that there is more ways that we're alike than not. But it also made me really sad when she said that she didn't feel comfortable in mom groups. And I think that, again, so many of us, we don't always feel safe in them either. So turns out I think it's another way that we're similar, right? So yeah, there's a lot of things we could take away from this. Maybe this week your strategy to struggle well would be to work even in the circle of friends that you currently have to be more of a safe friend. Maybe you could ask your friends, am I safe? Am I a safe person to be around and to share with? If you feel really brave and ready to hear the answer. Maybe you completely identified with what Lori said. And this week you can maybe reach out to even Lori. She's very happy to talk to you, or tell somebody the secret that you've been holding on to for fear that you're somehow the worst of the worst, because that is not true. Maybe you don't have a similar story to Lori, but you also have a secret and no one knows it. Infidelity in your marriage, or you just have this like anger that if anybody knew how angry you got at your kids, you feel like it'd be super bad and people could never know. Or if you told somebody how you harm yourself, or you would really like to, I would encourage you to find someone and talk to them. Please tell them the thing that you would rather take to your grave. I like to not record this part until after I go to church on Sunday, not because I don't think that God can talk to me other places other than church, but because, I don't know, I just want to give him one final chance to say something so that I can share it with y'all. And I thought it was really cool today. The whole topic was on secrets, and the pastor read out of Psalm 32. Psalm 32 was written by David, who was called a man after God's own heart, but who also like did super duper tons of really bad things, including like, you know, killing a guy and all that kind of stuff. Not great. But this is what he said. Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Like, that Joker did a bunch of bad stuff and he knew his sins were covered. Blessed is the one whose sin God doesn't count against him, in whose spirit there's no deceit. Y'all, if y'all got a secret, there's some deceit there. This is what David said. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy on me and my strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Some of you get that. You are feeling that right now. But I acknowledge my sin to you, David goes on to say. I didn't cover up my iniquity. I said, I'm going to confess my transgressions to the Lord. You forgave the guilt of my sin. Then he goes on to say, Lord, you are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. Then he pleads with the listener, don't be like the horse or the mule who have no understanding. They have to be controlled by a bit and a bridle. Many are the woes of the wicked, but the Lord's unfailing love surrounds the one who trusts in him. Guys, I would just encourage you to confess the sin that you do not want anybody to know. I promise the enemy loves your secret and he loves your silence. He doesn't want you to tell either. So bring it to the light. If you don't have a safe person, email me. Email Lori. Promise. There's freedom waiting for you. Okay? I'm praying for you guys. This was heavy, but I think it was important. And I hope that it blessed you as much as it blessed me. Don't forget to come by Instagram on Wednesday night for Struggle Well Wednesday. And you can share your deepest, darkest secret there. Just kidding. I will not be asking you to do that. But I would like you to show up and tell us how you're doing. Unrelated to all this heaviness. Or related to it. I don't care. So much freedom here. Anyway, y'all, I think you're the best. Have a great week of struggling well.